on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you may be. We're here in the Phoenix 98 FM studio in Brentwood to bring you tonight's Orient Hour. And in the studio, I've got Howard Gould. Good evening, Howard.
Good evening. Nice to be here.
I'll turn your mic up. It will help.
that has always been your problem. Thanks. Yeah. really a pleasure to be here in such esteemed company.
Thank you. And Jamie Stripes here too.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening. Nice to be here.
And from now on, it's him. It's the great showman himself. It's Billy Herring. Are you sick to death of being called the greatest showman?
I mean, from now on, if I couldn't hear it again, that would be wonderful. No, it's been good. The last couple of days have been absolutely mad, but all good. Good publicity for the school. A bit weird seeing myself on telly, but that's how it is. It's all good.
It's been great for us. We've all enjoyed it. We know him. He doesn't know us anymore. I was surprised he bothered turning up. You know, well, I thought we'd be below him by now. You know, he's been on BBC World and BBC TV, ITV.
Well, I keep changing my number, Andy, but you keep ringing me. So, you know, it's I don't know how it happens, you know.
Oh, dear. So how you been, Howard, anyway?
Yeah, well, not too bad, thank you.
You've been keeping an eye on things at the O's, have you?
Well, yeah, I guess you have to, yeah. Following them for 50-odd years, it's a bit hard to get out of your blood system.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jamie, some good news as regards spectators this week.
Yeah, apparently it's just been announced we're getting 2,000 in the ground for the pre-season friendlies, starting with West Ham, I think.
Sounds good to me. Fancy that, a bit West Ham?
Do you know what? I think it's going to be one of those where, as much as I like to get into the ground and watch them play, I don't think it's going to be a full-strength West Ham side. I'd like to see a proper, you know, first 11 come down to Orient just to, like, kick things off a little bit. But I think they've got two fixtures on the same night, so I think what they were going to do, they're going to split the first-team squad and we'd probably see a mixture of a few first-teamers and a few youth players. So, you know what? I might actually put myself forward for the ballot just in case. I've not been for, it must be about 15 months now.
Mad, isn't it, how long our time has flown by. But when you think about it like that, yeah, I haven't watched a live game of football since it all stopped. Yeah. Madness. Howard, yeah?
Yeah, okay. What was that? Probably March. Yeah. March last year. Yeah. So, yeah, over a year. Amazing.
Yeah, I worked it out. It's the first time I've not been to a professional game, the longest gap since 1977.
I think we're all like that, mate, at the moment. It's been horrendous for everybody, hasn't it? And then you've got the European Championships. I was just saying to Stuart on the Drive Time show that I bothered to watch the England-Scotland match, and about halfway through I thought, this is absolute rubbish, isn't it? It wasn't very good at all, was it, really?
Oh, yeah, but it was brilliant for me, though. I'll tell you why, because everyone sort of hyped up Scotland after that game, and it meant that Croatia was 6-4 yesterday, so I had a nice little centre on it. So, beautiful. £25 return. Get in. Scotland. See you later, Scotland. Bye-bye.
What a week you're having.
Eh? Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. I might do the lottery.
Can you just write down six random numbers from 1 to 55 and just leave them on the table and, you know, it won't be too bad. So this 2000 in, Jamie, it's a ballot, is it?
Yeah, going by the club press release from earlier, yeah. It goes like this. The decision to allow 2,000 spectators comes following discussions with the Waltham Forest Borough Council, and no away fans will be permitted. So it looks like it's just going to be us there, which is good. Priority for these home fixtures will go to our season card holders, with more information coming soon on how you can enter the ballot for each game. Tickets will be priced at £12 for adults and £7 for under-18s, which isn't too bad, I think. The first of these games will see Premier League neighbours West Ham United visit the Bray Group Stadium with a 7pm kickoff set for Tuesday, July the 13th. Details for the game set to take place at home on Saturday the 17th of July will be announced soon.
I mean, given that obviously we've taken West Ham, a couple of players off West Ham recently with Dan Kemp and Tunji Akinola, I wonder if Kenny Jackett will use it as an opportunity to look for some players as well.
Yeah, why not? I think... We're definitely going to have to start recruiting a little bit quicker than we are already. I know everyone's waiting for the contracts to run out at the end of the month.
Are you panicking, Jamie?
No, I'm not panicking. I'm not panicking. Not yet. You know, if we've only got 15 players by like the 7th of August, I might panic then. But I don't think that's going to happen.
And we saw the list, didn't we? Come on, let's be fair, people. We got sent the list from Division 1 and 2, and it's hundreds and hundreds of players. So, you know, there's absolutely no reason to panic, because that's just the League 1 and 2. Now, we've got, obviously, the Conference Prem as well. I mean, I should think they're the three divisions that we would be mainly concentrating on. So I don't see any reason to panic at all, because there's going to be hundreds of footballers looking for jobs, and it's a buyer's market, isn't it?
There might not be any reason to panic, but you know that Orient fans love a drama, and I count myself amongst that, yeah. Right? And I've already seen some tweets about Mr. Jackett and not attracting the superstars that some people feel that he should, so, you know.
Dearly me. Who actually put that up?
I mean, can't remember now.
Do they not realise what division Orient play in?
I mean, I did wonder if it was a parody account, but you can't tell these days. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you have got that realism. You've got to have that realism. We are in League 2, and until we prove otherwise, there'll be limitations in to who you can sign. Even if you've got the most famous manager, Alex Ferguson could walk through the door. I mean, we're in League 2. He's not going to get everybody that you'd expect, because the players, obviously, will get offers from clubs that are higher.
I mean, wow, what do you think of the signings we've made so far? Are you impressed?
Yeah, I think so. I find that surprising about Kenny Jackett hasn't got a draw, because I think all three players have actually said that when they found out that it was him after them, they were more than happy to come down and join him. So I'm not panicking. I'm just, you would like to see some forwards in the house sooner rather than later, though. So it's getting close to time where the boys are going to get together for pre-season. So, but I think in the next week or two, there'll certainly be some movement. But yeah, I think they're looking good at the moment.
It is the forwards, isn't it, Bill, that is the worry at the moment for a lot of people. Because whatever you know, Johnson, whether he done his business and wasn't going to do much anymore for us, and Wilkinson, you know, I have my doubts about his attitude really towards the playing side of things, because you know, toys out of the pram if you don't play where you want to play. I've no time for that myself, if that's true, that he refused to play in the position when he was asked to. As I said before on the show, that to me, that's goodbye, you know, off you go down the road and good luck to you, you know. Because, but it's still, whatever you think, between the two of them, that's a lot of goals we've got to get back in the bank, isn't it?
I still say Royal Soteriou is a diamond in the rough. You know, he didn't have a pre-season last season. Obviously, there was the whole contract issue and what have you. And he came in late, so therefore, he wasn't the fittest. By the time he then got fit, he got into the side. He took a few games to get into his stride. He started to look really good again, really sharp. Then he got his injury and he was out for a long period of time. So, I think full pre-season under his belt, I think you'll be really surprised this season about his emergence. And part of me believes that actually that's the reason why they weren't necessarily breaking all the breaking the bank to keep Danny Johnson, because I believe that Soteriou is going to score goals this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that, obviously, like Andy said, that we are light up front. I think everyone's nerves will be put at rest as soon as a few forwards come through the door. And actually, if you look at the signings, it's more or less building from the back, isn't he? Because we've signed a left back, a left-sided defender, and a defensive CDM. So I'm just hope that we get two, three forwards in. We definitely need the target man, maybe another poacher, and also like to see two or three wide, proper wide men brought in this season. I think with the more crosses we get in, the more goals we're going to score, and I'm sure Kenny's going to address that at some point.
Yeah, Howard, I mean, it's quite right that you build from the back, because obviously you don't concede, you're not going to lose, are you?
No, that's the obvious point, I think, but what you mentioned about we've got a lot of goals to try and get back. We said that when Macabon and Josh left, and how are we going to replace those goals, and those two boys came in and did it. So I think, again, with Kenny Jackett's draw and the way they're going about their business, I don't think there'll be a problem in finding guys that will be good enough and suit us. But as you say, from the back, it's the vigour thing needs to be sorted out as well, because we can't be left without a goalkeeper for too long. Probably
no.
I mean, what do you feel about Sam Sargent? Do you feel as though he could step up to the number one position? Is he ready to do that yet?
Well, listening to a couple of the guys behind the scenes, they, you know, especially, I think you had the interview with who had the interview with Brillo. I think it was your and Outlook kind of interview with him, and
he was
that's all right.
That's all right. They're good lads, Paul and Steve. They're good. They're good friends of ours.
No, they are. We're all fine. Yeah. We're all on the same side. And he said he's more than capable. And I think he has matured. What I've seen of him, you know, I think one of the problems with him was that he maybe is a little bit, he's not as vocal as he could be. And I think that does come with maturity. And I'd certainly give him another chance, yeah, but we certainly need to get that position sorted out.
Do you know, it's interesting you say that, Howard, because I think that the youngsters that have come through, both, you talk about Sam Sargent and Dan Happy, they're both very quiet. And they're both in positions where they need to be dominant. And it'll be interesting. Obviously, it's brilliant news that Dan Happy signed a new 2-year deal. I think that's absolutely fantastic. I think there is a defender in there who will play at a lot higher level. But I just want to see him and Sarge be a bit more dominant now. You know, they've both been in the first team squad for a couple of seasons now. Well, more than a couple of seasons now, you know. Happy's played over 100 first team games. He's no longer a kid. He's now a man. He's now a seasoned professional. And I really want to see him step up to the plate. And I really genuinely hope he does.
Yeah, I think, well, he actually said that in his own interview, didn't he? When he signed, it's on the website there. And he said he's got to step up to the plate now, and he's one of the older players, so he's got to lead the youngers. But he's also got those two guys that have been brought in who he's going to work alongside. So I dare say he should push on. I think he knows he needs to. He had a bad end of the season, but he's personally, I felt that he may have needed a fresh start somewhere else. He looked like he was stale, and yeah, the leadership for him, it wasn't right at the time. And I mean, I've known him for years and years, you know, since he's come through as a from West Ham as a youth. So to see him leave, it would have been sad. So I'm really, really pleased he's signed up again. And as you say, I think he will kick on. He knows it himself. He's got to do it. I think he will.
Well, you touched on it there. And I think the thing is, Bill and Jamie, that the experience that's been signed alongside Dan Happy is going to make a major difference to Happy himself, isn't it? Because he didn't really have a solid partner with him all the time. It's to keep changing last season. Change. And you haven't got that telepathy there, that understanding that if he's moved there, I'll drop in here, and vice versa. You sort of know where people are going to be. And you keep chop change. Systems were being changed. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. The team itself was very disjointed. But I say, the signings around Happy are what I think are going to bring the best out of the boy.
It's interesting you say that, Andy, because I go back to the Jabbo interview that we did, and one of the things that Jabbo said was that when he got into the first team, he would then, the youngsters would then look to him as he was the one that had come through, and he was the one that they were looking up to. And I think that Dan Happy now needs to be that person who people like Hector Kyprianou Shabrak Ogie, as an example, need to start to look up to someone who has come through the youth team in the same way that they have, and is established himself in the first team now, you know, so that he then plays that role as well.
Yeah, it's also hot competition for places in the back four, though, if you think about it, because Ogie can play central defence if it comes down to it. Thompson's going to come back, Beckles is there, so it's a big season for him. I agree with Howard. I think his end of last season wasn't the greatest. And at one stage, I thought, you know, is he going to move? Is he going to stay? And I don't think the big move quite materialised for him, did it? I mean, is it worth going to another League Two side? Well, not really. You might as well stay another 2 years and improve, hopefully. So, yeah, a big season for him. But like I said, that hopefully that competition for places will bring the best out of him.
Do you think that with Darren Pratley signing as well, do you think that will help or hinder Hector Cipriano? What do you think, Jamie?
Difficult to say. I've not really seen too much of Darren Pratley, but I don't think having an experienced League One midfielder next year won't do him any harm at all, really. I think we just need to polish the rough edges off with him. I think, like I said, I know Christian's a big fan of him, and he's obviously breaking into the Cyprus national side now, so there's a big player in there somewhere. But maybe that's a signing that's going to get the most out of him for us. And, if it does come off, what season he's going to have next season.
Do you think they can play together, Howard?
Pratley and Cipriano?
Yeah.
I haven't seen enough of Pratley, but I think they're possibly similar players. I know Hector likes to push forward. I think Cissé is going to have to pull his socks up if he wants to get in that first team.
I forgot about Cissé. I completely forgot about him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously you've got Clay. So again, depending on formation and how we go with that, if there's two centre mids, you obviously think Pratley's coming to be one of them. And who does he play alongside? And are they too similar or?
But do you think his experience, Darren's experience, will be the key that he will know how to bring him into the game, because he's been around enough times, he's been around the block a few times. He's got that experience to bring a certain sort of player into a game because he knows how to do it.
Yeah, no doubt he's got that experience. I know from reading what the Charlton fans were saying about him, they were still very, very pleased with the way he was playing last season. So in a way, it's a little bit of a coup for us. But like I said, there's competition for those four CDM spots, isn't there? We just forgot about Cissé, but he's another one who's got to step up to the plate.
Question: if we go into the season with the four midfielders as Cissé, Clay, Pratley, and Cipriano, is everyone happy with that? Does everyone feel confident that is a good enough four for a promotion push?
Ooh, blimey,
go for it again.
Cissé, Clay, Cipriano, Pratley. Are you happy with those as a four for a promotion push?
Is there enough pace?
That's what I was thinking. Is there enough engine in there? Is there any dynamism going forward, breaking out from our box to a box to box midfielder would be high on my list, I have to say.
I mean, your wide players, if we are signing any, they've got to have an engine in them, because they're going to have to be up and down that park,
The player with the best engine left for Cambridge United. But that's another story. We need to get that type of player in.
He causes great discussion, Brophy, but the fact is, to me, if he's playing out wide, which is what the argument was, any experienced fullback is just going to show him inside, and it'll be blocked off. Yeah. It'll be blocked off every time, and he very rarely... He has pace. He's got something about him, but against anybody who knows the game, he comes up short.
Yeah.
I mean, we're also seeing here, we're assuming that Kenny Jackett will play a 4-4-2. I'm assuming that, but we don't know that, because obviously the other thing to think about is, where does that leave Kemp? Because we haven't mentioned him yet. So is he one of your wide men, or is he in the 10?
So he's a good ball player, Kemp, isn't he? But is he really going to get stuck in and win you loads of tackles?
Oh, I think he does. Yeah? For a little man, I think he does.
Yeah, okay.
I'd go with the 10 role for Kemp, definitely. I don't think he's express pace on the wing, although he can put a cross in. There's no problem with that. But operating behind the forward, I think he could do a lot for us. He can take a free kick. He can bring players into the game. And also, he's got an engine, and he can put his foot in when required. I mean, I think that was the difference between him and Maguire-Drew. You got 90 minutes out of him. I mean, Maguire-Drew had all the skill, but very rarely would you see him past 60 minutes in the game.
So how many, Bill, roughly, what sort of numbers do you think that Kenny Jackett needs to still bring in?
Oh, God, I must admit, I haven't looked at the squad in detail, but I would reckon maybe 5 or 6 at least.
I'm looking...
On permanence, and then I'm thinking loans on top?
Yeah, well, I'm looking 7, 8, 9. Mm. Really?
I think the loan market's going to be busy for Orient. That's my personal opinion. I don't think they're going to sign that many players on full-time contracts.
And the other thing is, has the squad cap gone away? That's the thing. Are we allowed to sign more than, 22 players last season, wasn't it? Are we still...
It's over a certain age as well, isn't it? So.
I mean, I'm sure I heard someone from the Football League or the PFA, or it might be Andy Holt on another podcast, who's chairman of Accrington Stanley, just saying it's not been finalised yet. They're still in discussions with the PFA. So that's something else that might be thrown in.
Well, also, in a minute or two, I should think we'll be getting the phone. People probably know, regular listeners, it's very high tech in here. We have basically this flashing torch that will go off when the phone rings. So it's a bit like the Gestapo interrogating me, really. I will tell you everything, you know, but it's one of those. This torch flashes in my eyes, and it means that hopefully in a moment or two, Omar Reza will be on the phone. And the fact is, Omar's obviously running the under-23s at Watford. Kenny used to be at Watford, and you never know. Ken might phone Omar, and there might be a few under-23s having a loan at Orient.
Well, interesting, talking about the Watford under-23s, Sam Dalby's been released. Mm. So do we think that maybe, would you like to see Sam Dalby back at the club?
Well, he showed promise, and then I don't know is the answer. We've not seen enough of him, remember, Bill. I mean, Omar will tell you the pros and cons of Dalby, I'm sure, once he rings through, if he does.
Howard, obviously you worked with Sam, and you know Sam, I would imagine. What did you think?
It's a tough one. I mean, as you say, he was never really fulfilled potential, was he? I mean, he went to Leeds, which might have been a little bit of a big jump for him. And then going back to Watford, you would think, oh yeah, he'll kick on here. So why have they released him? You know, good lad, great technique. Would he do us a job? I think we probably got enough in his position not to bother with him personally.
Yeah, just have interest as well. The other thing I was thinking about the other day, obviously we've signed another left back, but we've already got Jaden Sweeney, and we've got I forgot his name again, Shadrach Ogie. Sorry, Shadrach, I apologise if you're listening. That's the second time I've done that. It won't be a third. Were you surprised that we offered Jaden a new deal, bear in mind that now means we've got three left backs?
I know Jaden, they do like Jaden. He's come through and he's doing really, really well. So I think potentially they might be looking at him for the future. Obviously, he hasn't quite broken in as a regular on the bench. And I think this might be his season to do that. I guess we've still got seven subs this year? So
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you might see him as a regular on there. Ogie could play centre half if we're not going to get... as cover for centre half if we're not going to get the guy back from West Ham.
I'd love to sign Sergio Canoli, you know. I would love to sign him. I think he would be a great addition to the squad.
Yeah. Well, we can play at centre half and right back, and at the moment we might be a little bit short at right back. I think it's the one position in defence that's probably up for grabs, because we released two during the summer after the massive debate we used to have about Ling and Judd, and
yeah, and then we released them both.
Yeah. So we released them both. So, yeah, I'd like to see him back. No problem with that signing.
Well, on that one, Jamie, the releasing Sam Ling, what do you make of that? I mean, we always said he was a steady defender. Do you think that was... Because I've heard it was his decision that he didn't want to sign because, obviously, working with his dad, he found it awkward. And that's what I've heard. It might just be rumours. I might be completely wrong there. But what do you think?
Do you know what? I don't think Sam Ling was as bad as a lot of people made out. I just don't think he was what we're looking for in regards to getting this club promoted in the Championship winning defence. So I don't blame him for, you know, if that is the case, I don't blame him for like wanting to leave, because obviously it's one less, you know, one less kicking he gets on social media. You know, you're only in the team because your dad's your dad's there, and it's probably done him and his dad a favour, you know, and a fresh start for him. And I think Martin Ling's gone on record before saying he'll have no problem picking the club up. I'm sure he'll find either a League Two club or a National League side willing to take him, no problem.
What rumours were going back to Dagenham, I think, weren't they? Howard, have you seen those?
I have seen that rumour, and Bromley as well were interested, apparently. So, he won't have any problem finding a club at either this level or certainly National League.
Well, I mean, we know he's a good pro. That's the thing, don't we? You know, he's not a problem in the dressing room. He's a good pro. He works hard. I do think he's, unfortunately, he's played a lot of his time with us when he's been injured.
Yeah, but there was that. I mean, there was him and Juddy. Unfortunately, it was always one of those where if you could mix the two, you'd have a fantastic player there. But I don't know why people got on his back about his dad being there. It's absolute nonsense.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Absolutely. I mean, we spent many a programme defending him, you know. We're still defending him. He's not even here anymore. Yeah. So there you go, you know. It's like one of those things.
I mean, this. Hopefully, we've got Omar ringing through shortly. As soon as this flashes, I'll let you know, guys. We don't want to lose the busy situation. But, yeah, hopefully, it was in touch with me earlier. It shouldn't be a problem. Right, the cup draw was made for the Papa John's Trophy.
Tomorrow.
Cup draw Group G, isn't it? We're in with Charlton and Crawley. Yeah, fixtures are tomorrow. And we're in with Group G. It says Charlton Athletic, Crawley, and one other club to be named, which is going to be a B team, a Premier League B side, which would be absolutely exhilarating for us all. Your thoughts on this competition, Jamie? I mean, whilst it's a realistic chance, I suppose, of Wembley, you know, it's.
I think it's more. More football politics than anything else. I mean, we spoke about it last year, and the Premier League have thrown a lot of money at the EFL and said, you know, if we can spice this competition up by sticking our under-23s in, and you know, here's X amount, and I think you get £50,000 just for taking part. And now with a lot of clubs not knowing even if we're going to allow fans back in the season, they're going to say see 50 grand and say, yeah, we'll have some of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so in a way, you can't blame it. For me, I don't like the idea of it. I just think it might lead to B teams through the back door. But then in saying that, I mean, it gives some of the fringe players that are in a chance to get some game time. You know, it's the one time they can have a run around and see what they can do. I mean, last season it actually worked out quite well for us because we managed to progress a little way, but also got a few run outs. I remember Miles Judd having a pretty good game against Wimbledon. Getting a few minutes in, and Lee Engel was just moved to Bradford City scoring a penalty, I think, so that's a collector's item. So I'm not a fan of it, but what can you do?
I 100% will not be going to any of those games. I can tell you that for nothing. I 100% won't be going. Even when we, a couple of seasons ago, wasn't it? We nearly got to Wembley or whatever it was. It's then we played in the semi-finals, yeah, yeah. And I didn't go to any of the games at all. Well, and even
would you have gone to Wembley though?
No, I wouldn't. No? Oh. Honestly, I wouldn't. I know it sounds ridiculous. I've seen, and my mate said exactly the same thing to me. Jimmy said the same thing to me. He said, "Well, you ain't going to Wembley." I said, "No, I won't." Nah, he said, "You'll go to Wembley." I said, "Mate, I've seen Orient play at Wembley before. I've never seen us win there." No. Right, he's the first thing. Right? Yeah. So why am I going to go to Wembley and see us get beaten again?
You'd have to be about 98 or something to see Orient win at Wembley. And that was the old Wembley, wasn't it?
It was 1931, I think it was. We beat Brentford in a league game. We had to play there because our pitch wasn't up to scratch or whatever it was. I think we played two games there, Brentford and Southend. So. Yeah, but I remember that game up at Roots.
What, the 1931?
1931, wasn't
it? Yeah. No, the one that the semi-final one, that was the most depressing night. Freezing cold.
Sorry, that's Billy, everybody. He's been speaking too much over the news, hasn't he? He's coughing his heart up here, drinking water copiously, but there we are.
Yeah. Two went up with a minute, about 2 minutes to go, and then Sheldon equalised and went out, and it's just like, bloody hell, we're never going to get to Wembley in the cup final, are we? Until we actually made it for, was it the FA Trophy, and did the usual and didn't turn up.
Oh, we love a defeat at Wembley, don't we? We love it.
Actually, Billy, I'm with you. You know, if we ever get to Wembley again, sod it, I'm not going.
it's a torturous place, wasn't it? it's not the best place to be. So we've looked at the cup draw there. I mean, it's as I say, it's a competition. Everybody's got.
I tell you one thing we did bring up actually, Andy. Darren Prattley playing against his ex-team.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
it's a little bit. I still won't be going, but you know, I mean, it adds a little bit of interest.
Well, it's just this thing, you know. I think the problem we lack is reserve football. I mean, I think that's the main problem, that we lack a competitive reserve league. We used to always have the combination league where you play Spurs or Arsenal's reserves, and I know it's going back a while now and things have changed. But you know, we certainly with the under 23 sides, even, you know, the Capitals under 23 sides could enter the old, you know, revamp of the Capital League, if you like, and clubs like ourselves and Wimbledon and Charlton etc. could put sides out midweek, and it's a competitive match and it keeps people match fit, you know. And I think we've got to try and, you know, rekindle this reserve football, you know, and get it regular reserve football back for the players.
I agree, but again, we're in the go back to the COVID crisis again, don't we? Because if we're going to have to, we can't even arrange behind closed doors friendlies and all the protocols and rigmarole that goes with that. I mean, is it worth our while trying to dig that up? I mean, I'm all for keeping players fit and ready to go, but logistically, I think it's going to be more of a problem.
Billy, sorry. I thought he was about to say something.
No, sorry, I was. I'll tell you what it was. I was actually just going back to the meeting that I attended last week, which was the Fans Forum. And just to raise a few bits and pieces from that, really, more than anything else for discussion, just to sort of see what people thought. So when we were talking, one of the things that the club wants to do is obviously increase home attendances to 7,000, which, you know, we said is a big ask. We haven't done it in a little while, but some of the suggestions are working with local schools. Safe standing was one that was mentioned, which I thought was really interesting. Where do you stand on the whole standing, sitting debate?
I can't see any reason why we shouldn't try safe standing. Not sure where they'd probably remove the seats again from maybe the front of the east end and go back to that terrace enclosure there and start from there. And I think it'd go down really well.
Yeah, would you stand?
Yeah, I don't mind standing. Yeah.
Yeah, Jamie?
Yeah, I don't mind. I think Howard's idea about removing the seats from the enclosure is a good idea. Again, it probably comes down to costs. When the ground was being revamped under Barry Hearn, they always said no, it was just not cost effective enough. But like I said, if you want to get 7,000 and maybe more, because it's probably the one way you can increase your capacity at Orient now, that's probably the way to go. I mean, you can take this. Maybe I'm not quite sure whether there's actually enough to bump it up to 10 or 12,000 by making safe standing where the old enclosure used to be. But maybe they might have to look, you know, somewhere else. But like I said, we're space limited. The way the ground's been developed, I'm not sure whether we can actually get up to 10,000 if it came down to it. But yeah, I think aiming for 7,000 attendance is a great idea. I'd love to see it. Obviously, the best way of getting it done is have a successful team pushing for promotion to League One.
Yeah, another suggestion was a family season ticket for 10 local football teams. So obviously you would give them one family season ticket per club so that they could then share it amongst them. And obviously a family goes each week. It might be a different family each week from their age group teams to kind of introduce the kids to football in the capital and, you know, potentially build some sort of lifelong fans that way and things. And then there was things like discounts on food and offers to the Premier League and Championship teams when there's international weekends. I think one of the things the club was keen to stress was that whatever we do, they don't want it to be the detriment of our own season ticket holders. So what do you think of those sorts of ideas?
Yeah, I'm all for it. Just try anything. I mean, Howard knows, you know, how important it is to get young people involved in the club. I mean, because they're the next generation of supporters. I mean, I went to plenty of AGMs when Barry Earn used to go turn around to the assembled shareholders and said, I'm amazed that so many of you are still alive this week. Yeah. Because you know, we were an ageing fan base, you know, and we needed new blood. And believe it or not, the year after it was brought up at one AGM that, you know, we should go back to remember the £10 season ticket.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when Barry Owens first took over, I mean, that was a great idea, and that brought a generation of young O's fans, you know, that got us through the 90s and into the early part of this century, and now we've got to go again and build that fan base up. So I'm well behind any ideas, you know, any ideas or thoughts to push us forward and, you know, get people involved in the club, make it more inclusive.
Especially when you look at, when you consider the losses that the club made this year. Obviously, one of the things that was mentioned. Jamie, what do you reckon the figure is for losses that we made this year?
Oh, it must be about 2.5 million. I think we've lost about 7 million over the last three seasons.
Howard, what's your guess?
I'm going with Jamie.
Yeah, not far off, to be fair. Loss of about £3 million. And that does include, though, the works to the east stand, which obviously were unplanned and had to be done as emergency works. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the board and the investors deserve a huge round of applause for keeping the club going, because I think that, you know, £3 million to anyone is a lot of money, yeah. You know. So, especially in the current climate when we're not quite sure when everything is going to be back up and running. So, fair play to everyone for that.
But again, it's another investment in the club, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, I've sat in the stand now for about 15 years, and I remember one game against Colchester on Boxing Day. I mean, we was literally having the cold shower. You know, it was like the roof was leaking and everything else. And you know what? You can't sell a club to a new fan base if your facilities aren't up to scratch. And as much as I loved the east stand, you know, it was showing its age quite badly. And I'm quite excited to go back and see how it's all panned out. I know the club trying their best to, you know, modernise it. I mean, without knocking it down and starting it off again, I mean, what else can we do? So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going back, and hopefully it'll pay dividends and we'll get new fans, and hopefully we'll see a winning side to welcome it back.
Yeah, so other things that were mentioned were things like how can we make the club more diverse, and suggestions were meet with local group leaders, look at languages that we use on promotion materials, and I know that Danny said that we were thinking about using QR code on some of our on our promotional materials, which would then people could use to then translate into different languages and things. Obviously, cause we know that Leighton is a really ethnically diverse area, so I think that's fantastic. Also, something else that was brought up was anything that will make you feel more comfortable slash confident when attending the game, which was COVID related, obviously, for when people go back, if anyone's worried about it. And it was suggested potentially the East Stand could be used as a socially distanced block for those who want access to it. What do we think of that?
It's probably going against what we're trying to achieve.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah.
But you're going to have to bear all these things in mind, and as you say, there's no easy fix at all. Going out into the schools and getting the youngsters in, and the £10 season ticket, that did work, and it still works, and maybe that's just a simple solution, and say, well, you don't have to invent anything new when it already works. If you want to go out again, just sell season tickets at £10 for the kids, because that will bring the next generation in. Going out into the schools does work. You do see the families and the children there. There has been improvement in the younger side of fans at the Oaks. So, yeah, I mean, if they continue the way they're going, we will get more. So,
yeah. So these are a few more things we brought up. What could we offer more in the range of club, shop and retail? So some of the things we brought up there, larger range for women. I don't mean larger as in size. Well, I mean a bigger range for women, shall we say.
You've done it now. Great showman indeed.
Karen's going to be sitting at home literally waiting to kill me for saying things like that. No, sorry.
What are you saying about Karen? It's not
I'm not saying...
It's not a larger range for women.
I'd quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, stop digging.
Yeah, can someone pass the great showman a shovel?
And another suggestion was a percentage discount in the shop for season ticket holders. What do we think about that?
Yeah. I always think that
Andy's not keen.
No, I'm in retail. You've got to have margins, you know. Yeah. You've got to remember it's off the top end. Every time you take a percentage off, you say, 10%, but that 10% will probably be 30-40% of their profit. You know, I mean, it's difficult times, but I get what you're saying. I think the 7,000 that you touched upon is very ambitious. Over time, maybe. But
that wasn't my idea, you know that, right?
Yeah, because I think we said before, didn't we, the 7,000, I think it was 7,100 was the last time they averaged it was 77-78, and that included the cup games. So that, which obviously when you're getting 20,000 or whatever, 18,000 banged in the ground, it knocks the average up quite a bit. But so it's doable, but it's like anything. Your product is what matters, and it's not the product in the shop, it's the product on the pitch. And if and that's my personal opinion with all this overseas malarkey, it's great, fantastic, but are we trying to run before we can walk in all these overseas business? I won't use a rude word, but previously we've been trying to, it wasn't even a polished one that we were trying to sell, it's give people a product that they say that's, if we get up next division and we're up the right end of League One, suddenly you've got a club with a chance of being a championship football club. Now you've got suddenly people, they win a lot more than they lose. People go in numbers. We may well be around that 7,000 mark because it's a reasonably affordable football in the capital, which is our tagline, if you like, our unique selling point that we're trying to push forward to people. And then you've got this thing to go overseas, but you're trying to sell something to somebody and they put that on after watching maybe, Spurs or it's probably a bad example, Spurs at the moment, but I mean, after watching the Premier League side. And then, of course, they watch that and, think, blimey, this is like chess as opposed to Speedway or something, the speed of it, as I say, the product they've got to get right, and all the commercial stuff in the world, you can't sell it to people unless the base thing that you're trying to push out there, the actual main thing of the business, is a reasonable quality. So we've got to get that right, and I think let's get everything concentrated on that, because I think it will pay dividends. We've got good commercial people at the club with far better brains commercially than I've ever had. I mean, I went to business college and things like that, but these people are well in advance of what I did and things, when you got your little diplomas that you got when you work for nationalised companies like I did back in the 70s and 80s. So these people are vastly advanced. advanced. They're tactical. They know what they're doing. But they can only do so much. Their hands are tied because the bottom line is they look out on that pitch at the moment on a Saturday, and it was, oh my dear, well, we're trying to sell things here. And look what we got.
Don't point at us when you say look at what we've got. Yeah, we're the best of what you've got.
I think that is one of the reasons why Kenny Jackett was appointed, because I think around February when Reed was talking about, you know, getting promotion, all of a sudden after like talking about being, you know, consolidating under Ross Embleton, and all of a sudden, you know, Ross Embleton got fired, you know, and all of a sudden now we've got Kenny Jackett, I think the people who run the club thinking, you know, we've really got to be serious now. You know, we've been here three and a half, 4 years. We've really got to start pushing this club forward. And I think that's why the main reason why Kenny Jackett was appointed manager of this football club.
All right, well, here's a question for you then. I'll open this up to everyone. One of the things that the board wants to do is encourage more fans to come to the ground earlier and leave later. So how do you go about doing that then?
Get a bloke out with a hat on and a red cap and sing from now on. No, I mean, go on. I mean, it's, seriously, I think you've got to get some kids' football out there on the pitch, you know, and things out on the pitch to get people into the ground if that's what they want to do. Either, you know, I mean, you can't do it in the middle of winter when the pitches are cutting up. I understand that. But when the pitches are in better condition, start and end of the season, if you like, they're more firm, then the women's matches may be an idea if they can be brought forward to, you know, 12:30 kickoff or something, or 12 o'clock kickoff.
Well, it was suggested actually that was one of the suggestions, was a women's or youth team game directly after the men's game. And the reason we say directly after is because obviously, again, you're looking at the pitch. You want them. You don't want the men's game played on the pitch directly after a game that's just been played on it potentially. Obviously, you know. With all due respect to both the women's team and the youth team, obviously the men's team is what has to take priority with regards to the pitch. But would you stay, guys? Would you stay? I certainly would. I would be interested to see one of the women's games if it was on directly afterwards and it was included in my season ticket.
I probably would. I think the problem is that so many fans have got their own match day pre-match routine, like going to the pub or supporters club or CAF or meet up with your mates somewhere. It's difficult to change it. I think the one thing that might help is, you know, we're talking about the pitch. I know that the club are looking forward to having one of those new generation pitches, which is like part synthetic and part grass. I think they've got more bourne wood. You know, everyone knows that Orient's pitch over the last 15 years has been not the best, to say the least. So if we get a decent pitch and more resilient, I don't think there's anything stopping that sort of thing. I know that Spurs and Chelsea, I think they're having, Manchester City, they've had women's matches before the main event, and that's been really well responded to. So I think it's something to consider. I just think infrastructure wise we're not quite ready for it yet. I think once we are there, there's no reason why we can't pursue those avenues.
I will just say, I think because of Watford Football Club, because Omer was in touch with me earlier, everything was fine, but I've not heard from Omer. And he was doing something at Watford. He says, I'll have to ring you from Watford because I'm doing something. It seems to be a curse with Watford at the moment, doesn't it?
Maybe he heard the start of the show and changed his mind.
But, he replied and retweeted to something we put up earlier. So I don't know what's gone on there, whether he's held up with something or other. So we can only apologise if you're holding on. And if by some fluke he rings in the next 15 minutes, we'll put him on. But at the moment, we're chugging along here with ourselves here, chatting about what may or may not be. But I mean, we were saying about reusing the pitches. I mean, we had to play a cup final straight after a previous cup final at Wembley, didn't we? So, you know,
I mean, their pitch is a little bit better than ours.
Yeah, but you're saying
it's got a little bit more investment as well.
Yeah. But you're talking about, this is down the line, but they're improving the pitch. But if they've put the synthetic in, you know, the Premier Standard sort of pitches in, then there's no reason why. You know, I wouldn't want it afterwards, though, Jamie, because you're going to cost things like the Supporters Club. They take quite a bit of money after a game. They're not going to take that. The pubs in the area aren't going to be very happy either, because, you know, you've got people sitting there who would have been using the pub, you know, some of the cafes for their dinner and things like that, and so on and so on. So,
but do you think, you know, though, that actually, obviously, you know, we're Orient. Are we? Is it our concern to worry about the pubs, or is it our concern to, surely we want the money that would be going to the pubs into the club?
Well, that's down to the club. I mean, you know, an astute club might think about taking over the lease of an empty building that was a pub. There was one or two sitting around in the Leighton area which were sitting there, and maybe Orient might be more advised to look at taking over a pub and calling it the Leighton Orient, you know, Arms, yeah, or whatever, you know.
Not a bad idea at all,
because, you know, they can then put their staff, some of their staff over there to run it on a match day, and you've got a venue, you've got lots of other things you can do it for, and Orient fans will use it. I mean, people locally, you know, reasonably locally, if they're going to go to a pub, they're more than likely use the official sort of club pub, if you like. I just think that's much more relatively low outlay for a return. You know, I mean, you're not putting out hundreds of thousands of pounds or anything. You're just, you're putting out, you know, a agreed rental with a free house, hopefully, where you can bring in your own stuff. I mean, there's still one or two pubs that haven't been demolished that are sitting there, not doing anything.
Well, for years and years, like, people are saying, well, football clubs, you've got to have more use out of them than 24 weeks a year, and obviously with the ground they occupy in the area, that's only too right. I think Accrington Stanley have just invested in a massive great big fan zone, they're building it now, so you can see why. I just think it's just like another idea to get as much money into the club as possible.
It was interesting, it was mentioned about a fan zone and what have you, but obviously we are limited where we are by the ground and what space is available there. Go on, Howard.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the footprint at Brisbane Road, as we know, it's just impossible to do anything, and now that we've lost the Score Centre and the pitch over the road there as well, doesn't help things at all. I remember when I was one of my tasks was to go and find out what other clubs are doing at our level regarding the kids and pre-match and things like that, and I went down to following the Orient around. It was good because at Northampton, for example, and Plymouth, they have these areas, they have the fan zones, they have the kids stuff pre-match, but they have the space surrounding the grounds, like MK Dons, they've got that area where they can do it, and that's just what we haven't got. So the Dasso pitch idea, I think, is great. If that comes along in the next 2 or 3 years, I think Kent Teague is keen on that, so that's good if we can keep him interested. Then, yes, pre-match, I think certainly you would open that pre-match. You'd have a lunch type of time where the parents could come for lunch and the kids would be playing on the pitch, and you invite schools in and they pay for that privilege. And I know Northampton had like 24 schools every single game, and they all pay for that. So, you know, there is something can be done.
I tell you as well, I went to university in Northampton, and our Saturday side, we played in the United Counties League, and every season the cup final for the United Counties League was at Northampton Town's ground. I played there about three or four times. And I wonder whether it's something that we could do with the London boroughs, with the universities around there potentially as well. Because then you're looking at a group of people who are old enough to drink as well, who might come down, play a game, and then actually might want to stay for a game afterwards, or might stay and watch a game afterwards potentially.
Yeah, there are things like that. I mean, I've noticed driven past the ground in the last couple of weeks, and there have been kids' tournaments going on. Adult finals are being played there. They have been played in the past. So, yeah, it's certainly feasible. Certainly no reason why we can't do that.
Another question that was brought up was, how do we grow our female fan base? And obviously, I know this is a question that, you know, we're sitting here, we're an all-male panel, so maybe we're not the best people to answer that question. But
we put it out there, Bill.
Yeah,
we have.
Absolutely.
Said if you're female and you're listening, you want to be part of the Orient Hour, just get in touch. And, you know, it's an open door. And one or two people that we did ask, they'd live, for logistic reasons, they just couldn't get here at the time of day, you know, where they live in London, you know. And so that's part of the reason. But I'd be more than happy when we do the Zoom calls from time to time. I mean, we'd be more than happy to involve them. And we are looking to get very involved with the Women's Football Club next season, as are the other lads as well on the other broadcasts. I mean, we're all willing as supporters to do our bit to help push that along. And, you know, it's never a closed door. It's an open door on this show as it is with the other shows.
Well, I mean, thinking about Andy, it might be a nice idea. Obviously, we just made three new signings for the women's team. Maybe we could get them on as the first guest, potentially, if we're allowed to.
Because they're in that intermittent in that period, that crossover period, you know, well, I spoke to Luke and he just said, look, you know, at this very moment in time, they're not putting anybody out for interview. But obviously, once things are settled and they know where they are, then they'll start arranging the interviews again, you know, with the broadcast. So yeah, that's fair enough. We've all got to sit tight for the next two or three weeks.
One thing you've got to bear in mind is next year the Women's Euros comes to England. We're hosting, so it might be a good idea to maybe try and put ourselves forward to be a training camp for one of the sites.
Great, yeah.
That could bring like female people, supporters in, or just like raise the interest for young girls or anybody.
You're spot on, because if the England camp can come there and play three or four friendlies at Brisbane Road along the way, that, as you say, that can only benefit the game. But we're more than happy to promote it. The one thing I would say about with the ideas you listed there, Billy, was Howard, remember, we used to have a thing called the Vice President's Club. And I think Nigel was probably a member, and his dad certainly was. And back in, God, you know, 30-odd years ago, it was £500 a year. So it wasn't top end, but it was more than most people would be paying out on top of their ticket. And they used to get a meal and everything in their own little clubhouse. And I thought, well, surely if you said it was £1,000 plus your season ticket, and you sectioned off maybe part of the gallery or wherever, and they had a buffet, private buffet, and they had a dinner once a year or something laid on, and it was a little bit more special, segregated out, and you may get 50 people join, so that's an extra £50,000 on top of their spendings and anything else, because it's those sort of numbers that the club have got to look at, not an extra 50 quid. I mean, you've got to be looking at 50,000, 100,000. That sort of thing's got to be coming in all the time, you know, and it is big bucks now.
I mean, just going back to the how to grow the female fan base, because there was some interesting suggestions that came out of that mention, which one of those was non-executives on the board. Because, as we say, currently on our board, we do not have any female representation at all. And that was something that I know that the board seems to be very open to. So that's potentially something we might well see in the future, which I think would be really good as well.
It is, Bill. But you know, I'm, without getting all political about anything, because we're not on a political station, you know, I'm not in favour. If people want to do it, then come forward and do it. But I don't think you should deliberately try and box tick anything and literally force people into a position. I mean, if they want to come forward, they should be welcomed and put themselves forward. Come forward. Let us know.
But I think, you know, I think it's more to do with the fact that if you're looking at how do we grow this particular area of the fan base, and we look at the club and we say, well, where have we got people within positions of power within the club? How do we grow the fan base if we don't have representation in those particular areas? And one of the, again, another suggestion was female employees at the club actually going out to local schools and stuff and talking about women in sport. Because it's huge at the moment, you know, it's something that is being promoted more and more, that we find ourselves, there is more equality. Obviously, we know we haven't got 100% equality in sport, but there is more equality in sport and what have you. So I do feel that sending out, you know, employees of the club, you know, we know that people like Lindsay, for example, do a fantastic job at the club. Seeing someone like herself go out to the schools, the colleges, and actually talking to them about women in sport and their roles they can play would be great. And another suggestion was to partner with a women's charity. Right. As well, you know, potentially.
You have to excuse my ignorance here. Who have they appointed as the women's manager? Do we know?
No, I must admit, I don't know.
No, I mean, because to me, all respect to whoever they have appointed, if you're that serious about it, you appoint a name. You know, in moderation, obviously, we're not going to get Kenny Jackett in, but, you know, you get a known player who's looking to make his name in coaching, and you say, well, this is somebody who, you know, they can only learn from. I mean, at the moment, the women's game's not progressed far enough, apart from the very top level, I don't think, to get a female manager in of renown, if you like, unless you're going to get Hope Powell or somebody. But but if you get a fella in, you know, people, I might use him as a coach, Adrian Whitbread, people like that, who've got a whole career of coaching behind them, who can impart great knowledge to these people. And improve their game. I think that's where you're going to get the awareness, and people like to watch winning sides as well. So if you can get that side to be successful, they'll turn up in their numbers at Orient. You know, they'll get a four-figure crowd. You know, and that's, I think, a realistic aim is to get 1,000 people to come and watch them.
Be great.
You know, and if you can do that with a bit of entertainment, maybe, you know, before the game, bit of almost a family day, if you like. On the pitch sort of thing beforehand, if you're not going to do it on the same day, you know, if you're going to do it on a Sunday or something like that. But you could get people turn up regularly, you know, if they're going to play at the ground, because it's the venue, isn't it?
Yeah.
you know, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think that... Sorry, go on, Howard, I'll cut you off.
I was just going to say that some of those ideas aren't actually new ideas, that the club have been doing them.
Right.
Maybe just go under the... They just go under the... whatever the expression is. I remember that, you know, you talk about female staff getting out there and doing it. We would have universities or colleges come in and host them in the Legends Lounge, and they would ask for members of staff in particular an area, so finance or marketing, whatever. And so whoever our member of staff would be, they would get up and do that and talk. So it's, as I say, it's not brand new. It maybe just needs to be taken out a little bit further and grown, you know.
And maybe it's the promotion of what the club do. Maybe we don't speak. Maybe we don't scream enough from the rooftops to say all the good things we do.
There was always that problem that a lot of the community stuff wasn't out there, you know. It was great that all the Orient fans knew what we were doing, but what about the rest of the world? So, yeah, maybe that's one of the things we need to do, is let people know that what we do a bit better.
Yeah, and I think that'd be interesting, because obviously we're very good at talking about the commercial side. We're great on our social medias and stuff with promoting the things we do. I think that our Twitter page is exceptionally good. I think the guys that run that do really, really well. But do we promote the other side of things enough to kind of show what we do? Maybe it's time for them to start a TikTok account, because I've heard that could be really good.
From now on, they might. You never know. You never know. Oh, no, that was bad, wasn't it? Sorry about that. It was pretty grim. Sorry about that, Billy. Any more TV appearances for you, Your Highness, this week?
No, I think I'm done now.
You've had your Andy Warhol moment, haven't you?
That's it, yeah.
No sequel, then?
No. Yeah, no, I don't think so. Someone said to me the other day, "Well, yeah, big things for next year." And I was thinking to myself, that's fine, because I'm not the head of year next year, because it'll be the other guy coming up. So good luck to him.
I wouldn't mind. I've got to say this. I showed the video to my mother-in-law, and she's 87 and very bad of hearing. And she said, "Oh," she listened very close to the speaker, and she said, "Isn't he a good singer?" I thought, well, I can't have the heart to tell her he's miming and it's not him. But yeah, she was very impressed with you, William. Very impressed. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Howard, lovely to see you, mate. You're looking very well.
Thank you very much. Yeah, nice to be invited. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we can only apologise, Omar. Obviously, something's happened there, but we don't know what, because he was in touch with us up to about 2 hours ago, so we don't know what's gone on, but there you go.
The perils of live radio.
Yes, and once again, we got through it. We get through whatever's thrown at us in life, don't we? You know, there's worse problems than that, and we get there. Jamie, as always, a pleasure, sir. And
thank you very much, Andy. I think I'll try and book me trip to Dundee, see if I can sneak in.
Yeah, you never know. Well, yeah, you wear an Ascot hat and maybe you know.
Yeah, incognito.
Yeah, just dress up for Ascot and walk around with a champagne glass and a big cigar, and they'll probably let you in, you know.
Yeah, probably
would do. Yeah. We're the wrong end of the scale, son. We're the wrong end of the scale. Bill, nice to see you.
You too, mate. Take care. Have a good week.
We're treading close to the wind there, aren't we? Everybody, have a lovely week. We should have, all things being normal, we should have the Orient quiz for you next week. So some of our competitors stand by. We'll be in touch with you, and we shall have a bit of fun on the show next week. See you next week, everybody.
Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground, you can get your kids in just £5, get an Orient here, it's only a quick, get a cup of tea. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an F8 Club 7, 78, we had John Sitter, that is most irate. We were club for a climber, but we don't care. Check.
Anderson Park. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.